So, I'm Mary, I'm an alcoholic. And this is the final step, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, that we carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice the principles in all our affairs. And this is just such an incredible step, and I've had the most joy living in this step. And I get to bring some of the points of Friday here to Sunday. So when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a member of the Congregational Church. And I share with you that my husband said that he just needed fellowship. So in 2002, right after I had finished reading my fifth step, I was at a retreat. I was sponsoring someone on a Crucio. Some of you may have experienced that mini course in Christianity. And I was at the chapel, and I had a spiritual experience. God usually talks to me, and I feel it interiorly. It's not audibly. But this morning at 6:30 a.m., it was Pentecost Sunday, and it was in May. I heard a voice say, "Come back to the church." And I turned around to look because I thought it was Father Martin, and there was no one there. And then it happened again, and it was audible, and it said, "Come back to the church." So I stayed for Mass, and I went home, and I told my husband. And he said, "Well, you better go back." And so I went back to the Catholic Church. There's a tradition where you make a full confession, and I was welcomed back into the church. And there was a group called the Women in Transition in a recovery home, and there was a group of women that were very much interested in attending church. And so I began to bring my van over on Sunday mornings, and we would go to church. And God had begun to place a series of things into my life that was connected to the church. So during an anniversary, a woman who had 1 year sobriety walked in, and we had passed each other over the summer. She was friends of my husband, and we were at an anniversary party. And she walked over to me at this anniversary, Wes Newbery's Big Book anniversary, and she said, "Aren't you Mary?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I need some help. I have a year sobriety, and I am just like going mad." And I said, "I'd be happy. I'd be honored, privileged to sponsor you." So we began to meet. And this woman had so many other compromising mental health issues that I had to give her about 10 minutes to just talk, and then we could begin the reading. And this one particular Thursday that we were meeting at the library, she was talking, and clearly she was in a state of distress. And I never do this, but I'm going to confess I did it. I did a turnaround with her. And we wrote down the name of the group and the cause of the resentment and what it affected. And then we did a turnaround, and then we did a fair turnaround. And she was able to just like, oh. It's almost like taking the air out of a balloon, you know, just to give her enough peace so that we could continue reading. I think we were at more about alcoholism. Well, she went to, she was a third, part of the third order of the Missionary of Charity Sisters in Dorchester. And the Mother Superior there said to her, "Are you on drugs?" She said, "Because I know what happened last week during your time at the," she volunteered at the house, "and you should be in a state of distress, and you're not. Mm-hmm. What happened? Are you taking medication?" And she said, "No, sister, my sponsor showed me how to do a turnaround." She said, "Do you think she'll come here?" No kidding. She booked me. And I came and I showed the sisters, you know, about I typed up how biblical our whole program is, right? And I brought it. And so they all had a resentment. And so we had the chalkboard. They were all sitting on the chair. And I wrote it out. And they said, we need the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, okay. And she said, would you come and share it with us? And I said, okay. And so she booked me in Washington, D.C. to share how we go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guess Mother Teresa was very confused about alcoholics and drug addicts. It was one population that she just couldn't understand, and she didn't know how to help them. And so I was there. It was Thanksgiving long weekend, and I figured I have a half a dozen sisters that would be sitting wanting to learn how to go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. There were 65 of them in this big hall. And I had made sheets, you know, to go through the 12 steps. And what began as just, you know, an introduction of the 12 steps became they all wanted to go through the process because so many of them were brought up in alcoholic homes, and some of them had come in and they were experiencing what we might call a dry drunk. And even though they had God as their solution, they didn't have the steps. And so for the next few years, I would go and I would put on retreats like this, and they all began to write. And then they would send me back because while the priests would listen to the confession part, you know, the resentment part, they weren't listening to everything else. So I would go back and listen to their fifth steps. And it just continued until there was a contingency of them that had gone through the process and now were teaching the new sisters. And then they were teaching other religious orders, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was sitting one day, and God said, that's why I wanted you to come back. Because if I wasn't a member in good standing in the Catholic Church, I would never have been able to do that. And if I was never able to do that, then I wouldn't have had the sister in Brooklyn give me the book that so beautifully helped my husband and I, which was Christopher West's book, Sex and Marriage. So, I mean, when I think about what God has done in my life and the 12th step, it's just incredible. So, people give me names, you know, in the program that I'm not, the word escapes me, it'll come to me. I'm a hybrid, but also I don't follow a particular way. I'm kind of, there's a word for it, but it escapes me. But anyway, so on one of these retreats on the ride home, I was taking the Silver Bullet from New Jersey to Boston. And remember I told you that my sponsor had me do extensive writing on flirting, right? And so in my writing, flirting was something that I had to really look at because I felt like I was not worthy unless I had your attention. So I had done a lot of work around that, and the only one that I flirt with is God and my husband. So it's really quite easy, you know? And so there was, at this particular time, there were a lot of helicopters going around. And, you know, there's no news, there's no TV where I was staying, so I had no idea of what was happening. So I was in the train station, and I was watching the news on one of the big TVs, and a man came over to me, and, you know, he was clearly trying to engage in conversation. Now, I have this whole new mindset, you know, I don't flirt with people, I, you know, men, women, children, puppies, no one. And, you know, I'm really conservative about who I talk to, keep my space, but he was persistent. And he says, so why are you here? Are you going to Boston? And I said, yes, I'm going to Boston. And that's it. And so why are you here? I said, oh, I was on a retreat. Well, what was the retreat about? And I said, really? You wanna know? I'm going to tell you. So I said it was on Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps. I was teaching a group of women about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, really? Can I sit with you on the train? I have a problem with alcohol, and I really would like to talk to you about it. And I said, sure. And so the 4.5 or 5 hours on the train, I sat with him, and we went through the preface, the forwards, the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, more about alcoholism, there is a solution. And by the grace of God, I had a meeting list because he was going to be in Boston. So I highlighted all the good, you know, healthy meetings that are in Boston and in the area. And I would never have known to even be that bold if I didn't have, you know, the relationship that I had with God. And even though my motive when I was trying to shock him, you know, into walking away, oh gosh, you know, she's one of them. It was providential. And I never knew what happened to him, but I was so willing to give away what was so freely given me. And that seems to be, you know, one of the things that that happens to me. I don't hold so close my anonymity. When I was being interviewed for the job, I told my director straight away that I was an alcoholic in recovery. I don't mention Alcoholics Anonymous. I just say I'm an alcoholic in recovery. And so all the clinicians knew. And so whenever there was a question about the disease of alcoholism, they'd knock on the door and they'd come in. And so I don't hold anonymity as something that I need to protect. And the reason why, I'll tell you a quick story. My son John was in middle school. Now, my husband grew up in the community that we live in, so the name is quite well known. And so we went to, you know, after the kids start school in September, they have an open house for the parents. And so on the wall is displayed in the English class your son or daughter's first essay. And my husband I was chatting with one of the women, and my husband was trying to find our son John's essay. So all of a sudden I look up and his face is white. And he looks like he just is in a state of shock. And so the opening or the title of the essay is "Who is My Hero?" And so I walk over to him, and he said, he couldn't even speak, he points, and he said, it starts with, "My mom is my hero, period. She is an alcoholic." It gets better. She's married to my dad. His name is Scott. He told her before they got married that if she didn't stop smoking, he wouldn't marry her. So my mother doesn't smoke cigarettes. She helps a lot of people that are in AA. So boom, my anonymity is blown, right? And what turned out to be a shaming experience to my husband turned out to be a wonderful experience for me because, you know, I got to know the counselors at the middle school and the principal and the vice principal, and many times I would be asked if I could help. So when our anonymity is broken, it's not something that, well, for me, it didn't turn into be a hardship. And many a times we have a little local market, and I would walk in just to buy something quick, and I would have a parent of one of my kids that was struggling with either a family member or themselves. So my 12-step work continues in places that you just can't imagine, It's on the soccer field with parents. It's in church because people know that you go to the AA meeting in the basement, and it's all throughout. So I there is no shame attached to my alcoholism. I find it to be one of the greatest things that that God has ever done, was to set me up for an opportunity to go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, to carry the principles everywhere requires, not just in an AA meeting, but also at home, right? And so I have four brothers, and, when I was in grad school, we had to do this family tree. And my aunt, who was so generous with her recovery, we went through on my mother's side, and just seeing the layers of generation that have had effect on the disease of alcoholism, and all the woundedness attached to it, and all the abuse. And so I've had opportunities to speak at family gatherings. Because it was never talked about. My family of origin, they never talked about it. And then maybe a few years ago, I host Thanksgiving, and we were standing in a circle, and we go around, and everyone shares what they're thankful for this year, and since we had our last circle of thanks. And I announced that I was 20 years sober. And my nephew, after dinner, came over and said, "Aunt Mary, tell me more about your sobriety, because my father never mentioned it to me." And so I had an opportunity to share with my nephew. And then he had some questions, and he had some experiences of his own. And he wondered about the family disease, And so it's interesting how open I was with the outside community, and how guarded I was within my own family of origin. And so I'm always in a state of learning about what God wants to do in my life regarding my sobriety and my relationship with Him. And it continues, as I shared with you earlier. God wants me to always be open and available. So I had a woman come to our West Newbury meeting, and it's an open meeting. And so she said, "I want to go through the steps, but I'm not an alcoholic. I was raised in an alcoholic house. I married an alcoholic. I have alcoholic children, but I'm not an alcoholic. But I want to go through the steps." And I said, "Well, have you ever heard of Al-Anon?" And she says, "Yes, I'm a member of Al-Anon." She said, "But I understand that I could go through these steps with you." And I said, "I'll take you through the 12 steps of the big book, but you have to promise me that you will take it back to Al-Anon. And you talk about it in the words, because some Al-Anons don't consider the big book as literature that's approved." And I said, "Well, you can share that this is the way Lois did it, and you don't violate anyone's, code." And so I took her through, and she has been gracious and has taken many, many women through that process. And, I have folks that say, you could be helping someone else in AA. Isn't it a singleness of purpose, primary purpose? And I say, I have a new employer, and I do what God asks me to do. And so if someone's coming into my arena, and I have the time, I'm certainly not going to say no. So unconventional, that's the word. I'm known as unconventional. So, I follow what God wants me to do, and I have an unconventional sponsorship or 12-step work, and it continues. I no longer travel like I used to, but I certainly will I certainly will consider speaking wherever God asks me. And I heard a wonderful speaker, you know, I get a daily reprieve email, and it has a bunch of speakers. So you get to have conference speakers all the time on this email. And there's a nun from Brooklyn, and she had the greatest way of saying how she goes about saying yes to speaking engagements. And it has nothing to do with herself, whether she wants to or not, but it's all about her calendar. So I have a calendar with me. And so if someone says, can you speak on such and such a date? I say, well, let's check the calendar. And so it's always the calendar that is the one that dictates, because I trust that God is the one running my calendar, because he's the one that's the employer. And I haven't been worn out. I haven't been tired or fatigued when I do that. But when I start running the show about what I will and won't do, which was an early recovery, I was often fatigued. So I trust that God will take very good care of me. And he hasn't disappointed me. When I continue to be available and continue to be open, he shows me that he will come through, and I trust that. So I had one more story, but it's not coming up, so I guess it's George's turn. And that's my experiment. Thank you.
Well, for the last time, I'm George. I'm an alcoholic. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carry this message to the other alcoholic. And I said many times that my spiritual awakening was not a big bang. I didn't hear anything. There were no flashes of light. But over a period of time, somewhere in these steps, I can't put my finger on a step. I don't know which day. But somewhere along the way, this door to my heart opened, and I discovered love. And that's what my spiritual awakening was. The last place, that was the last thing I ever thought it was going to be. I say that I always knew what romance was. I knew what passion was. I knew what sex was. But I never knew what love was. And discovering that is like I said yesterday, is to discover the joy of living. We were talking about it earlier this morning. If I have my eyes open, there's several times during the course of the day to express love. It could be as magnanimous as making a hospice visit or listening to a fifth step or as simple as opening the door for someone or whatever. So those opportunities are around me all the time. And I'm just grateful to be able to live not in amore, although I have that as well, but in agape. And I'd also like to say that when I first started, I was sober of 2 or 3 years, and I was sponsoring a couple of people, and I asked my sponsor about continuing to sponsor people. And he said, George, you cannot take a person to a place that you yourself have not been. So he said, I would suggest that you no longer sponsor people till you have experience with all 12 steps. He said, I would always hope that you would offer friendship and fellowship, but sponsoring people, wait till you've had the experience. So I did that. I did not sponsor anybody until I had experience with all 12 steps. And it says, to practice these principles in all of our affairs. I didn't know what a principle was. The only principle I knew was the principle of my high school. So I had to look it up. And a principle is defined as a rule, a regulation, or a code of conduct. I don't know of any regulations in AA, but I do know there are a couple of simple rules, but there are several codes of conduct. And earlier today we talked about, in the 11th step, be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection, love and tolerance of others. What can we pack into the stream of life? Just to name a few. So those codes of conduct that we learn in this program are the truths and the principles that bring us to a successful and happy life. And as I said the first day, that my sponsor said, George, there are laws, there are principles, there are truths that govern this world that we live in, and you're living in violation of nearly every one of them. So it was in this 12-step journey that I was able to start to learn the principles that and the truths that govern this world, in spite of myself. I also look at these 12 steps like the I like word pictures and metaphors, and I look at these 12 steps like I was given the combination to a great vault. And these steps, numbered and put in sequence into that combination, opens this door of this great vault. And inside is pure joy and love, and it was where my higher power is. And I learned that in this program. Carry this message to the other alcoholic. I thought I'd share with you how this renaissance of this big book started. Around 1982, 1983, in Hyannis, the Cape Area, there were six guys that wanted to do the 12 steps. And every time they went to a 12 and 12 meeting, but they never really got any directions on how to do the steps, and they wanted to do them. And they met an old-timer who said, well, you know, the steps are really in the big book. And they never knew that. Neither did I, for that matter. So they met at a small, very small conference room at the Cape Cod Community College. It wasn't any bigger than a small kitchen. And they have a picture of it today. So these six guys sat, and then they started this new meeting called a big book meeting, big book step study meeting. But they turned it into a discussion meeting as well. And finally they said, look, we're drifting off. Let's at least concentrate on the step that we're on and eliminate all of the other stuff that we want to talk about. So as time went on, they started to rough out a group conscience that started to have some structure and some foundation to it. And they quickly outgrew this little small room, and they moved it to Cape Cod Community College, and it was a men-only meeting. So then they said, well, you know, it seems that we've got to be able to stay on the step. We need somebody that's done the steps. So they wouldn't let anybody talk unless you had done the steps. So they started to have a guest speaker, and that guest speaker had to be qualified, had experience with a step, and he could share. And then to stop the backstories or whatever, they decided that if you hadn't do the step, you couldn't even speak from the cheap seats. So they started to continually tighten up this group conscience to basically where it was that the guest speaker had to have done the steps as it's laid out in the big book, that you were not allowed to speak unless you had done the step. And they clearly said that, you know, we don't want to intimidate anybody, but this is a step study meeting. This is our format. You're welcome to go to other meetings. But in this meeting right here, this is the way we're going to run it. So they started to get some popularity, and then they moved it to the Cape Cod. They moved it to Congregational Church on Main Street in Hyannis. Now there's 70, 80 guys going to this meeting, and some people are going and they're really upset. They're calling Central Service. They want the meeting taken out of the book. They're saying you can't speak when you go there. They interrupt you. There's time limits. And Central Service is saying they're not violating any traditions. They're autonomous, and this is their group conscience. We're not taking them out of the book. So I went to them when they started going to that meeting when it was on Main Street, and then it grew even more, and then it was moved to the Catholic Church where the Kennedys were married. So the meeting is really, at that time, was getting very, very popular. And they also had a women's meeting that the guys' wives and girlfriends started right up the street. So I'm going to this meeting every Thursday night, and I'm like, it's like I discovered the Holy Grail. You know, it was like, this is Mecca for me, you know? And so I was making that trip regularly, and I had a girl working for me, and she was in AA. And I said, Liz, I said, this is big book step study meeting. I said, it's like nothing I've ever seen. You got to check this out. There's a woman's meeting down the street started by the wives and the girlfriends. And I said, maybe you'd like to come down on a Thursday and I'll drop you off and I'll go to the men's meeting. She goes, yeah, I'll go with you sometime. So she hopped in the car a couple weeks later and off we went. And I love telling the story because I dropped her off at the women's meeting. I went to the men's meeting, which was a mile down the street, and I come back to get her, and she opens the door and jumps in and looks at me and says, I'm in. So she shut the door, and we started going down every Thursday night. There were two of us. And at the time, I was the I was in charge of the tape. We had cassettes, if you can remember cassettes. And I had a and I had a shoebox full of cassettes. So on the way home, we would play the cassette, and we'd listen to the meeting on the way home as well. And then we started telling a few more people. So now I had a big Jeep Wagoneer. I could seat like 9 people. So now I got a carload of people going down to this Hyannis meeting, men and women. We would drop the women off and then the men. Then we would have 2 carloads. And on some nights, we would have 3 carloads of people going from Rainham, Mass., all the way to Hyannis on a Thursday night. And we weren't the only ones. It was a group coming from Mattapoisett, a group coming from Fairhaven, Duxbury. It was the only place that you could go to hear this quality message of recovery in the Big Book. So after a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, I was in the restaurant business at the time, and I said to Liz, I says, you know, maybe we could help carry this message. Maybe we could start a meeting, you know? And she goes, yeah, maybe we could do that. And we had a carload of people, so we had a little base to work with. So I said, well, we could use my restaurant. I said, we got this little seating area in the back that holds about 20 people. And I said, the coffee's free and we don't have to pay any rent. So we decided to do that. And then we decided that, well, we can't have it at night. We're open for business, so I can't have an AA meeting then. And we can't have it Monday through Friday during the day because people are working. So that just left Saturday and Sunday. And I said, Liz, I don't want to come in here on my only day off. I'm not having a meeting on Sunday. So that left just Saturday morning. And I said, well, we open for business at 11:30. So I said, we're going to have to at least have a half an hour to clean up, put the chairs away, or move things around. So if we want to do an hour and a half meeting, we have to do it at 9:30 to 11 o'clock. And I said, who the heck is going to come to an AA meeting on a Saturday morning at 9:30? But that was the day that we started, and decided since this was the original way that the first 100 members did it, we decided to call the meeting the original recipe because it was in a restaurant, never thinking that it would go any further than that. And we also will always be grateful to the men and women from the Hyannis meeting that would come in bad weather and traffic, and they would come and we would have a guest speaker coming. But there were times when we couldn't get a speaker, if there was a blizzard or whatever. So I was in charge of the cassettes. So we would sit around a table, 6 or 7 of us, and we had a cassette player. And we would listen to a cassette. That was our guest speaker. And we had a lot of short meetings back then because with only 6 or 7 people and we had a time limit, the meetings only lasted 25, 30 minutes. But we were not going to break that group conscience. We felt that that was the foundation of a good meeting. So that's the way it was. And then we served really good chicken. So the guest speaker got a bucket of chicken to take home with. And people that are still around talk about that. And after about a month, we had 10, 15 people now showing up every Saturday morning. Then we got 20, 25 people. Now I got more cars in the parking lot for the AA meeting than I do for customers. I remember this couple coming in about 10:30 in the morning, and the door was open, and they come walking. I go, excuse me, I'm sorry, we're not open. They go, what are all these people here? And I said, oh, we're having an AA meeting. What? So so we ended up moving it to the Federated Church, Trinitarian Church down the street. And now, thanks to a good, tight group conscience, a chairperson that is reminded of the responsibility that he has to the group to make sure that his speaker, he or she, is vetted, has done the work, and also has the courage to keep us on point from the cheap seats. And because of that kind of group conscience, we are now celebrating our (clears throat) 29 years. Wow. And we have 70 to 100 people at that meeting every Saturday morning. Wow. And all we did is follow the directions, you know. that's, you know, practicing these principles in all of our affairs. I wish I could say that, I might have a little difficulty with this. I wish I could say that since I started this process, there's a word they use earlier in the book, that no further vicissitudes will shake him. I wish I could say that since I started this process that I didn't have any vicissitudes in my life, but that would not be the case. 14 years into sobriety, business decisions that I made when I was drinking came back to haunt me. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars were lost in restaurant and real estate transactions. I went through corporate bankruptcy, which led to personal bankruptcy. I went through a divorce. I watched 26 years of hard work in the business that I love slide through my fingertips. And I entered into a career change at 49 years old with $100 left in my pocket. But I never stopped practicing these principles to the best of my ability, and I never stopped coming to meetings. And one day at a time, some 20 years later, it has all come back. In some ways, a lot more. I met a wonderful girl. I live in a beautiful bungalow on the lakefront. I'm financially solvent today. I recently retired where I was a top performer in my field. I have a great relationship with my two kids, my five grandsons. My life is manageable today. So it says that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. I'm the first one to say, I think not. I believe that to the bottom core of my soul, that God has done for me what I could not do for myself. In spite of all of the vicissitudes, I can still sit here and say that a lot of wonderful things have happened between the first and the 12 steps. And it's been a journey I'm glad I didn't miss. I wish you all the very best that this fellowship has to offer. Thanks.